BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
My name is Ross Sutherland. This is a series about the life of the mysterious poet and performance artist Arthur Craven. Craven was the nephew of Oscar Wilde. In Mexico in 1918, Craven disappeared without a trace, never to be seen again. Artist André Breton, author of the 1924 Surrealist Manifesto, cited Craven as one of the most important artists of his generation. Philosopher and founder of Situationism, Guy Debord was obsessed with Arthur Craven. Since his vanishing, Arthur Craven has gone on to be known as the lost grandfather of modern art.
He's this literary hero that I never knew that I had.
Man of fashion, chemist, whore, drunk, musician,
this
laborer, painter,
actor. Is the escape artist.
Arthur Craven!
Arthur Craven.
Monsieur Delaunay has a face like an inflamed pig.
Patron saint of the surrealists.
His colours have German accents.
Inventor of performance art.
Oh, asshole!
Fire the starting pistol for modernism.
To understand Dada, to even understand punk rock.
Yes! Arthur Craven!
Alternative comedy.
A little pose in front of the mirror.
Our most daring performers to date.
I write to anger my colleagues.
Cause a scandal in everything that he did.
You should have a look at Arthur Craven.
What a...
Escape artist. People say Arthur Craven's aura haunts the whole of the 20th century. And yet, despite his reputation, very little concrete evidence of Arthur Craven's exploits remain. In this series, I've been consulting with Roger Conover, the leading writer on Craven.
Hi.
Roger knows pretty much more about Arthur Craven than anyone else.
There's so many apocryphal stories about Arthur Craven, it's hard to say what's fiction and what's invented and what's imagined and what's true and what's imagined and what's true.
One time, actually, he announced that he would commit suicide wearing only a jockstrap and draping his balls on the table, and then he berated the audience for coming to and making a social spectacle of someone's
death.
Was going to subvert and undermine all expectations of what a performance was or what an audience expected. You know, he did live in Berlin briefly. Right. And in Berlin, he was literally kicked out of the city by policemen for carrying four prostitutes on his shoulders in the Kurfürstendamm.
It was too much for Berlin. Berlin wasn't big enough for him. And then, you know, when he got to New York, one of his...
And pissed on the painting that he was critiquing.
And then he was put in jail and...
Of all those bewildering stories, the one that really stuck out for me was the story that claimed that Arthur Craven, remember, a poet, competed in an arena-level boxing match against world heavyweight boxing champion Jack Johnson, a.k.a. the Galveston Giant, with thousands of people in attendance. Now, it turns out that story is, in fact, completely true. It happened in Barcelona in 1916. How did this poet, who spent most of their time hanging out in cafes in Paris, also end up with this parallel life as a heavyweight boxer? What does this tell us about the man who apparently invented performance art? What are the connections here?
Must have been a remarkably mentally strong human being.
This is Steve Fowler, boxing coach and avant-garde artist.
I have massive respect for anyone who stepped in the ring, let alone in the ring with someone like Jack Johnson, who's definitely going to pummel your face in.
Just relax a little bit. A lot of information going in right now, just relax.
Capturing a character like Arthur Craven was always going to feel like a fight. Right from day one, I felt like I was climbing into the ring with him. Of course, as any boxer will tell you, you've got to do your research. You've got to learn where your opponent is coming from.
He fights lean, he fights tall, he's got interesting footwork, he's got good weight distribution, and he fights in a way that's quite subtle and makes him look quite...
Poet and boxer strike many people initially as opposites, one being intellectual and one being physical. But I think in Arthur Craven, the fusion of these seeming double identities is really very poetic, and both involve a kind of metric, both in terms of footwork and meter on the page. And they also both involve dancing, the dance of verse or the dance of feet in the boxing ring.
Reportedly, whenever his name was announced by the referee, Craven would leap up from his chair and holler,
"Yes! Arthur Craven, the snake charmer, the hotel thief, the confidence man, Queen Dowager of Iceland, sailor, logger, gold prospector, the poet with the shortest haircut in the world!"
This is not unlike Muhammad Ali, who in a way Arthur Craven is a kind of ideal model for in an earlier century. Arthur Craven, who was known as the loudmouth boxer who fought with his mouth as well as with his hands, full of taunting and full of exaggeration and full of the verbal bluster.
It's unlikely Craven's opponents would have ever faced a boxer like Arthur Craven before. Wherever these outbursts came from, Craven's psychological tactics worked through a series of defaults, disqualifications, and withdrawals by his opponents. Arthur Craven became amateur light heavyweight champion of France. And he did so without fighting a single round. Our hero literally talked his way to victory.
Yes!
What does this tell us about the man who apparently invented performance art? I suspect the key to the making of Arthur Craven the boxer is buried deep in his past, well away from the boxing ring. Probably here in Lausanne, Switzerland, on the edge of Lake Geneva. This is the sound of me jogging along the edge of the lake. I bought myself some nice silky boxing shorts for the occasion.
Oh, wow, I wish you could see what I'm seeing right now. The lake, it's like the mirror at the end of the world. It's breathtaking.
Arthur Craven was born here in Lausanne in 1887. Back then, he was known by his birth name, Fabian Lloyd. His father's sister was Constance Lloyd, later marrying Oscar Wilde to become Constance Wilde. After Oscar Wilde was tried and imprisoned for his homosexuality, Mrs. Wilde took her children and moved here, seeking refuge with her brother, Otho. However, Otho, who'd never liked Wilde, named a price for this arrangement. If she wanted them to help raise her family, Constance and her children would have to abandon the Wilde name forever. The name Oscar Wilde was never to be uttered again. Wilde's children were supposed to grow up believing their anonymous father was already dead, as if erased from history altogether.
There's a quote of Craven's that I keep coming back to. "As soon as I could speak, I knew that everything people told me was a lie." I can only speculate, but it feels like he's talking about the Wilde scandal here. When Fabian found out the true identity of his uncle, was this the moment that changed him forever? I mean, imagine, to find out that you're related to one of the most famous, brilliant, larger-than-life artists of the age, but also to find out that your parents have been lying to you and Wilde's own children, to find out that you'd been living in someone else's fiction, all because of your family's fear of scandal. Sadly, by the time the lie was exposed and Fabian knew the truth, Oscar Wilde was dead. Still, now that Fabian knew this alternate family history, it seems he felt like he had to pick a side. His parents were Wilde. He chose Wilde.
After being expelled from several boarding schools, teenage Fabian escaped to America, where he rode the boxcar and hitchhiked coast to coast. He lived in traveller camps and would have most likely crossed paths with carnival wrestlers, fighters travelling town to town, challenging locals. When Fabian returned to Europe, he began to dress in dandyish clothes. He bought a fur coat, just like Oscar Wilde's. Fabian fell in with petty criminals. He'd later tell stories of his days consorting with card sharps and sex workers in Berlin. Being 6'1", he was a lightning rod for trouble. Fabian embraced it. He courted spectacle. Fabian embraced everything that his parents had tried to erase from his family tree. He had decided to be someone of reputation, even if that reputation was entirely negative. Then, age 22, Fabian underwent a further transformation. Now living in Paris, he joined a boxing club run by legendary trainer Fernand Cooney. Within a year, Fabian Lloyd was no more. He literally ceased to exist. From that moment onwards, he had a new name, a new identity. Now, he was Arthur Craven, boxer. After 22 years of rejecting any form of discipline, Fabian finally found a school that made sense to him. Clearly something happened in the boxing ring that changed his life. Whatever it was he found in the ring, I think it's probably something that really only other boxers understand.
I got a bit addicted to that feeling of pressure and excitement and adrenaline. And now I think that's why I perform. And I think that's Craven too, right?
Stephen J. Fowler is an artist and writer. He's also competed in over 80 amateur fights across boxing and mixed martial arts.
Boxing and performing are both frightening, highly pressured, rewarding, exciting practices by people who are slightly disturbed.
Good job. The discipline of boxing can be useful to those of us who struggle to control our emotion, whether that's excesses of anger or fear. I wonder if this was part of the appeal for Craven, whether boxing helped him disconnect from his past in Lausanne, helped him disconnect from his parents and become something new.
Yeah!
All boxers know that the mind is the weak spot. If you can get in their head, you can control the narrative of the fight.
Sailor, logger, gold prospector.
When I first arrived for competitions, I'd immediately go right up to the person that I was competing against and shake their hand and be incredibly nice to them, because I knew that that was really off-putting in a world where people are supposed to be massively antagonistic and masculine, and they would really not know how to deal with that, or something like the culture of the stare down.
Through talking to Steve, I started to see how being both a poet and a boxer could have given Arthur Craven an advantage in the ring, a set of tools that would take him all the way to an arena match with Jack Johnson. We'll get to that Johnson fight in a later episode. There remains more to that match than meets the eye, I think. Through the art of boxing, Arthur Craven learned how to weave stories of his own. He learned how to be the manipulator, not the manipulated. Of course, if this had just led to an uneventful mid-tier boxing career, we wouldn't be talking about Arthur Craven. What made Craven different is that he didn't just confine his storytelling skills to boxing. Arthur Craven began a lifelong experiment between boxing and art. Craven made the whole world his boxing ring, twisting reality wherever he went with larger-than-life personas. The man who robbed a jewelry shop in Switzerland. The man who became the embodiment of the Dada art movement. The man wanted by the CIA who vanished into the Mexican Gulf. Craven turned himself
into a living, breathing fantasy character. His whole life was a show. And yet, tragically, just like all boxing matches, the blood was always real. The Escape Artist, Episode 2, The Boxer, was written, presented and produced by me, Ross Sutherland. It was produced for the BBC by Melvin Rickaby. The music was by Jeremy Wormsley.